This is The Doctor Is In, your bi-weekly podcast that discusses all things technical and not so technical. The Doctor Is In podcast is produced by ARRL, the National Association for Amateur Radio, and sponsored by DX Engineering, helping you shrink the globe. See their website at www.dxengineering.com. And now, here's your host, QST editor Steve Ford, WB8IMY, and the doctor himself, Joel Hallis, W1ZR.
Welcome to The Doctor Is In. I'm Steve Ford, WB8IMY, and Joel Hallis, W1ZR, is not with us this week. So I've taken the initiative and I've dragged in Bart Yonke, W9JJ, the ARRL Radio Sport Manager. And the reason I did that was I consider Bart to be a VHF, UHF guru of sorts. He has been at this for many, many years, longer than some of our listeners may have been alive. And so we wanted to use this opportunity to talk about VHF, UHF, so-called weak signal, which has a meaning all of its own, FM, and so on, because amateur radio in some circles tends to be rather HF-centric. We tend to talk about just HF only, when there's a heck of a lot more involved to amateur radio, certainly, than what happens below 50 megahertz, much more so. And Bart, we have a contest coming up this weekend, which is a viable opportunity, but I wanted to ask you about your adventures in VHF, UHF. You've been at this once again, I think, for quite a long time.
It's been a couple of years, Steve. Thanks for inviting me in.
Just a couple?
Just a couple. So my early beginnings were in the late 1970s, during some of that boom era, when a lot of hams became licensed, being of that age group. People were brought in part by local clubs, creating the environment for people to become licensed, maybe even giving classes. And the local club I did be a part of that time was actually in Wausau, Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Valley Radio Association. And they gave classes at the local technical school, and it was a great environment to get involved in amateur radio through. And like many groups, they had repeaters and repeater systems, and people were invited to join the club and become a part of the activity, including using the repeaters. And I found it interesting listening on my either handheld or mobile transceiver that I could hear everybody on the repeater input frequencies almost as well as I could hear them on the output frequencies, being out in the flatlands in the Midwest. And so I wanted to find out more about communicating directly at VHF, and then found myself working my way into the individual and groups that were engaged in simplex activities, if you will, and weak signal, and what did that mean, and then the multiple modes, and finding out that there's a whole new world of VHF at single sideband and CW, in addition to FM.
Now, if you had to define weak signal, because you hear that sometime in ham circles, so he's a weak signal operator, because truly the signals aren't necessarily weak. It's kind of a misnomer, isn't it?
It is. It kind of separates the environment of repeated signals from peer-to-peer or simplex signals. You can have weak signal operation on FM simplex, and there's becoming more and more of that in our VHF contesting realm. More focused, though, it tended to be the people who were on sideband and CW, people who were taking advantage of extended troposcatter propagation, those who found out that the Northern Lights, the Aurora Borealis, was a VHF radio reflector, those that found out that meteor showers weren't just for visual observing, but were for bouncing signals off the ionized components of the atmosphere when the meteors burned up, and sporadic E, that's also common at 10 meters and other bands. Hey, it's a common phenomena at 6 meters and even at 2 meters, and a few contacts at 220 as well, or 222.
Oh, absolutely. And if somebody wanted to get involved in weak signal, or maybe I should just reference you in this case. I mean, obviously now you're a dyed-in-the-wool veteran, but in the beginning, didn't you have to put up massive towers and amplifiers and gigantic single sideband transceivers? Or is it, you see, I'm setting you up here. Is it possible to do this on a more modest scale that somebody could really be attracted to?
Sure. Well, certainly in our day, brute force was more of the emphasis or the focus when we were trying to make some of those extended contacts. We didn't have the benefit of the digital systems that are being used today, digital techniques, the significantly ultra-low noise preamps, the high-gain VHF and UHF Yagis that are more prolific today. So again, time and technology has advanced the processes and the ability to copy the weak signals. So now today where, and we can use the example of meteor scatters or even moon bounce, where we're using even modest antennas, single Yagis, and a few hundred watts. In days gone by, we would have used 500 to 1,000 watts, and we would used two or four Yagis rather than a single antenna.
You know, you bring up moon bounce. That's something in all of my years of being a ham I have never done. I've never made a moon bounce contact yet. And you're right. We now have people, and in fact, we had an article in QST about it a couple of years ago, who are setting up in maybe parks or wherever with an 11, 12-element Yagi, something like that, 150-watt amplifier on 432 megahertz, and they're running some of the digital modes, such as the WSJT-type modes, and remarkably making contacts, bouncing their signals off the surface of the moon. That's pretty incredible. How many people are doing that, do you think? Do you have any idea?
Well, you know, the answer is it's thousands. Thousands of amateurs, both in the U.S. and with a significant focus on Europe and Asia. There are a number, again, in the thousands of amateurs who are doing this. And they have arrays from single antennas all the way up to massive multi-Yagi arrays. In the most recent EME contest that we had, you would find some of the larger stations making over 100 contacts on 432 megahertz. Stations well over 50 contacts, that's 50, on 1296 megahertz. I haven't seen some of the tallies yet for 2 meters, but I'm sure those numbers are definitely over 100 contacts as well.
Wow. What was the fellow down in Texas that had the incredible array?
That was Dave Blatchke, W5UN.
Yes, yes.
So his array is no longer up. KB8RQ still has a large array. Those are both on 2 meters. And as you evolve to some of the other bands like 432, DL7 Alpha Papa Victor has 128 Yagi array.
Whoa.
And he is copying single Yagi stations down to very low power levels.
I'm sure he is.
November Charlie 1 India has 48 Yagis. Mm. And during the recent EME contest, copied a station who set up with a handheld Yagi in a balcony running 50 watts. I actually operated and was on 1296 megahertz from one of the stations. And we copied a single Yagi running 400 watts on 1296 moon bounce.
Now, for the rest of us, people like me who just want to put up a single Yagi, we have to depend on the big boys to hear us. Is that what you're saying?
That's where it began. And obviously, it is just a monumental, exciting thing to hear your own echoes. But you can't always assume you'll have a station big enough to do that. So the other station does the heavy lifting. He does the work. In days gone by, the description of a path was 40 dB. If you could generate 20 dB and the other station could generate 20 dB, and we'll call that antenna gain, then you were capable of the path. So today, a 30 dB station trying to work you with a 10 dB station, again, makes the difference. But there's another component to that, and that is that the new digital softwares allow you to dig into the signal environment 10 dB below what you can hear. So you can reduce that 40 dB down to, say, a 30 dB path.
Yes.
Because of the advances in the software, and even better than that.
Just to back up a second, we've been talking about EME, Earth, Moon, Earth, or moon bounce. You mentioned in passing back at the beginning, tropospheric openings, bringing it back down to Earth, no pun intended.
Sure.
What are people doing as far as terrestrial, so-called, again, weak signal communication?
So terrestrial communications doesn't involve pointing at the moon. These are paths that you know exist, or you try through trial and error to accomplish a communications path between you and another station. Let's say in the Midwest, where the environment is a flatter area, you don't have mountains and hills and an excessive number of trees, you will have a trouble scatter distance of perhaps, say, 400 miles plus or minus. Come into New England or the mountain areas, and that's reduced because of the reduction in signals from the mountains being in the way or the trees being in the way. If you're near the coast, you will have coastal enhancement, sometimes inversions, but because you've just got that open horizon, you'll be able to accomplish greater distances. So if you're in Long Island and you're pointing down the southeast coast, you may very well be able to achieve 500-mile communications distances without difficulty. If you're near the Mississippi River or some of the more prominent rivers throughout the U.S. and you point down the river between, you know, the temperature inversion, the moisture hanging over the rivers, et cetera, again, you can extend your distances. And that's just troposcatter. Add into it these periodic meteor showers that we have. And
yes,
we put them on our calendar as well, the ARL's event calendar. And during those meteor scatter events, you'll have ionization from burning meteors, and that will provide short duration burst communications, allowing you to extend your distances out to 1,000 plus miles. The maximum generally is about 1,500. Uh-huh. It takes a pretty healthy station to do that. 800 to 1,000 miles is commonplace.
Oh, that's amazing.
Now, introduce MSK-144 software, the new digital software, and the
yes.
WSJT suite, and let's say on 6 meters, 50.260. And every day, there's people trying to communicate via meteor scatter just because they can. It's not about focusing on a meteor shower per se. It's the paths are generally there. There's always generally some meteors, and people will exercise those frequencies and those modes to take advantage of them.
Okay. Well, I want to talk briefly about the contest that's going to be coming up this weekend for the people that we're hoping will hear this podcast before then. But before we do, let's take a break and hear from DX Engineering, and we will be back.
Every ham radio operator knows speed matters. Whether it's jumping in your truck during an emergency or staying up all night for lightning-quick contesting, seconds count. And there's nothing more painful than being off the air waiting for equipment to arrive. At DX Engineering, we know a thing or two about speed. You can count on us to provide the fastest shipping in the ham universe. How fast? You get same-day shipping on most orders placed by 10 p.m. Eastern Time. It's that fast. So that new rig, antenna, cable assembly, or replacement part you need will make it to your shack in plenty of time to work a remote DXCC entity or dominate the competition in the next contest. And the best part is, DX Engineering offers free shipping for most orders over $99. Radio waves travel at the speed of light. Lucky for you, so does DX Engineering. Visit dxengineering.com. That's dxengineering.com.
And we're back. And Bart, I want to ask you about the contest coming up this weekend. Can you tell us something about that?
I sure can, Steve. Starting at 1900 UTC on Saturday begins the ARL's January VHF contest. This is a two-day event. It ends at 0359 UTC Sunday night, and it's one of the many contests that ARL puts on during the year. We have events on January, June, August, 222 megahertz and up event, September, and even September and October 10 gigahertz event, all operating in a contest mode. Getting started, we've got just a couple of highlights for you. You need to decide if you want to participate. How do you want to participate? Do you want to operate from home? Do you want to do it from your vehicle, which we call roving? Do you want to do it from a portable site of some sort? You can sort of make these determinations based on what equipment you have available to you. Maybe what power level, what modes you want to use. Of course, with the equipment, you can decide what bands you want. And then,
yes.
Of course, people can get into the category of operation that think that they feel suits them the best. From, if you will, fixed station at home, low power, perhaps high power, 100 watts or more on 6 and 2 meters. You've got your three-band operation, which with our commonplace HF plus VHF radios that have 6 meters, 2 meters, and 440.
Yes.
Portable, which is a low-power category. Again, allowing people to backpack, if you will, gear, battery-powered with small antennas. And to sort of top all that off, we even have an FM-only category, where if you are interested in FM, you have the ability from your location to make simplex contacts from location to location. Take advantage of that and get equipment on the air and give that a try. Of course, we do have our multi-app categories. Any four bands is our limited category. And then finally, unlimited, anything goes as our highest multi-app category.
Now, thinking of some of our listeners who may be relatively new to amateur radio, perhaps they only own a handheld FM transceiver. If they're living in an area where maybe they have hills, mountains, who knows, could they participate in a contest by just simply driving or hiking to the top of the nearest hill and just using their handheld up there?
They can very well do so, Steve. Again, we have, as there's no restrictions on simplex frequency use, they can get on frequencies like 146.52, 52.525, 223.5, 446.0. These are all common FM simplex calling frequencies. And if they do that at more prime times, perhaps midday or perhaps more closer to, say, 4 to 6 p.m., they will probably find people calling CQ. It all depends on sort of their geographic area. It's a little bit more popular in the east just because there's more stations to work. But there's no harm in doing that and calling CQ and see who answers. We'd always encourage stations who are using the national FM simplex calling frequencies to listen for local traffic and certainly bow to any communications that are taking place, especially if they seem to be emergency communications related.
Of course. Yeah, I've occasionally taken handheld or mobile rigs up to the tops of ridges here in New England. And just with a mobile antenna, it's remarkable what you can hear and how far you can hear. I've been able to sit on a ridgetop, and I'm not talking thousands of feet up in the air. You know, we're talking a couple of hundred feet maybe. And just with a mobile antenna, on simplex, mind you, I'm hearing stations, in some cases, a couple of hundred miles away.
You may have been listening on the national simplex calling frequencies or plus or minus, you know, say 146.55, et cetera.
Yes.
But you might also have been compelled to listen to the input of some of the repeater frequencies.
That's true.
That are out there and be amazed at how many of the stations using the repeaters you could actually hear on the repeater input. These are people who are, you're technically capable of working direct without using the repeater at all.
That's true. And this brings me back again to somebody who might be interested in taking the next step beyond that to, again, so-called weak signal operation with, I'm guessing, single sideband. Is that the most popular mode for that?
It's definitely the most popular mode. And if you graduate at some point to digital operations on VHF, the digital modem, either built in or attached to the radio, is using the audio component from, you know, using it from a sound card from the PC through the modem to the radio, and it needs to use the audio front end of your radio. So if you're using single sideband, you will feed it into your radio as a single sideband modulated signal. If you're feeding it in FM, it's going to do it that way as well. Again,
yes.
Interface to sound card to radio. So you really need to decide, you know, what do you have now? And if you have something, a combination of, you know, FM simplex gear, single sideband gear, keep in mind that with your HF plus 6, plus 2, plus 440 radios, you generally have all these modes available. Consider taking advantage of them. Some people who have a really nice HF radio said, I'd really like to be able to figure out how I can make my HF radio work at VHF. And there are a number of transverters now available out there today through both U.S. and foreign distributors. And they don't have to be expensive. And they'll get you on those bands as an interface to your rig. And not to forget antennas as well, Steve, because you can begin with vertical antennas and somebody will say, hey, I've got this nice 2-meter sideband radio and an amplifier, but all I have is a vertical. That doesn't work. And the answer is it certainly does work. You will lose polarization attenuation of about 3 dB,
yes.
3 dB loss. But, I mean, if you're already starting out with big signals, you don't lose that much.
No.
Get on and try it. In more recent times, I had some damage to a 6-meter antenna, so I decided to use my tri-band beam. And my tri-band beam had almost a perfect match at 6 meters. And not only that, I can hear both off the front and the back of the tri-band beam because it acts as a dipole.
Now, this was an HF tri-band beam.
Exactly.
Did you manage to get loaded up on 6 meters and radiate a signal?
Exactly. And as our earlier doctor has also been engaged in talking about projects, I believe he did a project where you add a director and a reflector to a tri-band beam, and you can actually make your tri-band beam into a 6 meter beam as well.
Yeah, yeah. That's pretty good. I've taken HF dipoles and managed to load them up on 6 meters, and especially during sporadic E-band openings, I've worked thousands of miles. It's been surprising what you can do.
Exactly. When there's a band opening, first and foremost, pretty much anything goes, anything works. The only antenna that doesn't work is the one you just didn't bother to connect up. So
that's right.
Wires work. People with loops for 80 meters, connect it to your 6 meter rig. Careful about the standing wave. Take a look at it. If you've got a tuner, give it a little try. Sometimes the tuners will work. Sometimes trimming the antenna will work. And you know what? It's really simple and it's pretty easy just to build a 6 meter dipole.
So there is life beyond FM repeaters is what you're saying, I think.
There absolutely is. And you know, during VHF contests, the people who participate in the events with varying change activity level differences are working dozens of stations. And you put yourself in some of the more focal areas of the West Coast, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Seattle. Put yourself in the Midwest, in the middle. Put yourself in the East. Again, depends where you're at, but you could make upwards of 100 contacts with a couple of different bands.
And it's fun.
Oh, it's really fun. And for those who are interested in getting in the fresh air, hilltopping, backpacking, getting together with others, maybe putting together a little multi-op effort, you know, it's about camping out. It's, you know, setting up on the hill, staying there for the weekend, maybe setting up a car or a van as a rover, and getting out and seeing the countryside. And so it's for those who do it, it's enjoyable and exciting.
So not only is there life beyond repeaters, there's life beyond HF.
I always thought that it was VHF was the focus, and then there's life beyond VHF if band conditions get a little quiet.
Exactly. Thank you very much, Bart.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
If you have a question for the doctor, email us at doctor@arrl.org. The Doctor Is In podcast is sponsored by DX Engineering at www.dxengineering.com. Background music provided by Purple Planet at www.purple-planet.com. This podcast is copyright ARRL. All rights are reserved. Until next time, I'm QST Managing Editor Becky Schoenfeld, W1BXY 73, and thanks for listening.